As a boy growing up reading the Bible on my own, there were many times that I would read things in the Old Testament prophecies I couldn't understand, and I can't understand them all now. There are people that claim that they can, but I think they're not telling it the way it is, because I think I'm about as smart as those, and I know I cannot understand it all, and I think they are telling a big one. Brethren, some things that I read in the New Testament that quotes or refers to Old Testament prophecy, and then I see how it was identified and described as being the fulfillment in the New Testament, I wouldn't have known that if the New Testament hadn't pointed it out. But there are a lot of things in those Old Testament prophecies that we can understand. And I'm going to be working on those particularly today. Isaiah refers in verse 1 of chapter 41 to Israel as the people. Now, many times we read those two words, the people, or people, and it doesn't mean a whole lot to us. But in God's mind, it meant a great deal. Because there were certain ones that were God's chosen, and they were called His people. We read in 1 Peter 2, 9 and 10, that wherein a contrast is made with those who once were no people, but now are the people of God. And you and I, all except Ken Cone, I suppose, are Gentiles. Poor Brother Ken. Yeah, I'll say one thing about him. He really takes it nice. He might as well, because he's outnumbered. But listen to me. Are there any others that are non-Gentiles in this room? Just one. Ken, you've got it all. Now, here we are, all us Gentiles. And there was a time when we were not the people, and now we are. But at the time that this was being written, it was the Jewish people. It was the Israelites that were the people of God. God had chosen them. In verses 1 through 20, we read concerning the final restoration of Israel. Now, if you go back to the last chapter, make that the last two chapters of the book of Joshua, and read. And then you go to the first two chapters of the book of Judges and read. You will see that it was foretold that those people that would be true and faithful to God, that God would continue to bless them as He had their forefathers in ages past. But it was foretold that if they would not be faithful, and if they would leave God, and if they would begin to follow after those that were no God, and follow after the so-called deities of the nations round about them, that God would destroy them, that He would no longer be their God, that He would allow them to be overcome. And we find time after time, especially throughout the book of Judges, that took place. Now it was under such conditions that they were taken into captivity by Babylon. Some of us here have been through there. I went through that part of the country in 1961. I had my family, my wife, and five children, and we went across Europe, through the Near Eastern countries. We got into the Bible lands there, especially in Jerusalem, headed out across Iraq and Iran, then over into Pakistan, up through Afghanistan, back through the Khyber Pass, down through the country of India, and across to Calcutta. We were on that journey for 4 months and 2 days. 14,537 miles, I suppose, the longest missionary journey in the history of Christianity. But I will always remember going through Baghdad, because Baghdad is almost exactly on the site of the ancient capital of Babylon. And there were to be four kings, if you recall, at the end of the book of Daniel, Daniel 1, verse 44. Maybe that's 244. We find there that there were to be four worldwide kingdoms, and that Babylonian kingdom was the first of those four. After that, there was to be a second kingdom, and it turned out to be the Medo-Persian. Then a third kingdom, the Grecian. And a fourth kingdom, the Roman. And so here we have Isaiah and these people, the Israel, under Babylonian captivity. But God never did forget his people, even though they had disobeyed him and had wandered far from him. We find, for instance, in that first verse, he said, "Keep silence before me, O islands, and let the people renew their strength." They had one time been strong when they were following after him. Then they became weak when the Babylonians were able to take them into captivity. But now God has thought of them again, and he has saying to the people that were not his people, "Let the people renew their strength. Let them come near. Then let them speak. Let us come near together to judgment." So we see that God has three things. One, he says, let them come near. God has said that if you will draw near, he will draw nigh to you. But if you draw away from God, he will draw away from you. Let them speak. And also let them come together to judgment. Then in verse 2, he says, Who raised up the righteous man from the east, called him to his foot, gave the nations before him, and made him rule over kings. He gave them as the dust to his sword, and as driven stubble to his bowl. Who is the word who in this passage? Is it not God himself? Jehovah God. He's the one that raised up that righteous man from the east. And as you go ahead and study the rest of the book of Isaiah, you will come to realize he's referring to Cyrus, who came from east and north of the capital of Babylon. He said he gave the nations, that is to say that this man, whoever this was, and it was Cyrus, was going to be over more than one nation. He gave the nations, and apparently he was to be a worldwide king. Made him rule over kings. Well, we think of a king as being somebody, but what about him that rules over kings? Well, we call him an emperor. And so this Cyrus was going to be an emperor over kings, or as we sometimes say, a king of kings. And he says, who hath wrought and done it? Well, he's trying to lead the mind to accept that it was the God of heaven that caused, the God of heaven that sets up kingdoms and that brings down kingdoms. He is the one that hath done it. And in verse 4, he identifies himself. He says, "I am the Lord, the first and with the last, I am he." So that God, who is a jealous God, and who is determined that he shall receive praise, honor, adulation, and obedience from all men, from all his creatures, he was careful to identify himself as the one. So many times we get a feeling that when God pulls back from us that he forgets us. Read verse 8. But thou, Israel, art my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen, the seed of Abraham, my friend. God had not forgotten them. They tried to forget him, but he did not forget them. And so we see that he says that he was the one that was going to do all of this. When we go on down, thou whom I have taken from the ends of the earth and called them from the chief men thereof and said unto thee, thou art my servant. I have chosen thee and not cast thee away. Fear not, or fear thou not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed, for I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. Now here the Israel people were in Babylonian captivity. And yet God, through his prophet Isaiah, is encouraging them. First, he says, fear thou not. Many times when we look at things from an earthly standpoint, we see reasons to be afraid. I've been hearing a lot of talk just this last week. What if Zhuganov in Russia wins and Yeltsin does not get it? And Zhuganov claims to be a communist. Does that mean that Russia will go back under communism? And if it does that mean that we're going to have jeopardy all over again as we had for all those years? Well, our God rules in the kingdoms of men. Our God knows what's going on. He knew what was going on right there. And so he says to Israel, fear thou not. Why? For I am with thee. But I'm in captivity, Israel would say. I know. But even when you are under captivity to some other, God can still be with you. He says, be not dismayed. Why? For I am thy God. I will strengthen thee. I will help thee. Yea, I will uphold thee with the right hand of my righteousness. Sometimes when we go into China, and we realize that suddenly we are in a hostile country. Hostile, that is to say, to Christianity. It is easy for some to be very reluctant to go in because they say, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get out. But once you get inside there and you're there and you're studying God's Word and you're teaching God's Word to people, I tell you, that assurance comes back to your heart. We sometimes sing the song, Blessed Assurance, Jesus is mine. Well, these people were actually in captivity, and yet God is assuring them. Down in verse 13, at the end of the verse, he says, fear not, I will help thee. Again in verse 14, fear not, thou worm Jacob, and ye men of Israel, I will help thee. And 15, I will make thee a new sharp threshing instrument having teeth. Have you ever tried to use an unserrated knife on a tough steak? I'm telling you, it's a botheration and a disgust to try to cut some steak when there's nothing there that's doing any cutting. And you can saw away and you're not getting anywhere. And then the waiter comes by and brings you a serrated knife. And man, you just go through that like hot butter. It's a lot of difference when you've got the proper tools. And so God is saying to these people, I will make thee a new, sharp threshing instrument having teeth. Thou shalt thresh the mountains and beat them small, and shalt make the hills as chaff. And so sometimes when you and I think it does not look very promising, if we will but study his will, we will find that there are wonderful things that he has assured us of, and that we ought not to be dismayed. Whatever betide, God will take care of us. In verse 16, he says toward the end of the verse, "Thou shalt rejoice in the Lord, and shall glory in the Holy One of Israel." Who do you suppose that could be but Jesus Christ? Verse 17, "I, the Lord, will hear them. I, the God of Israel, will not forsake them. I will open rivers in high places and fountains in the midst of the valleys. I will make the wilderness a pool of water, and the dry land springs of water." Then in verse 20, "That they may see and know and consider and understand together that the hand of the Lord hath done this, and the Holy One of Israel hath created it." The problem is that when God does something for us, and that we could not do it in our own strength, do we give him the credit, or do we try to take the credit unto ourselves? He uses four words in that passage: that they may see, look at that word, and know, and consider, and understand that the hand of the Lord hath done this. And so what you and I must do is to try to put ourselves in the hand of the Lord. And if we will follow in his way, then he will do these great things for us. In the second portion of this chapter, verses 21 down through 29, we are assured that where the Lord is absent, there is no hope. As we move about in those countries that Brother David and I go to, we oftentimes see all kinds of graven images. We see sculptures of beasts, of birds, and of hideous things that people bow down and worship. I wonder sometimes how anybody could worship some of the things that they have made. How is it that they can make it with their own hands and then bow down and worship a thing they made? But they do. But in this passage, in this part of chapter 41, he is showing that they may claim to be gods, but they are no gods. He said, "Let them bring them forth and show us what will happen." In other words, if those that claim to be gods, for instance, in Babylon, all right, if they are gods, let them show us what shall happen. Well, you ask of them, they cannot tell you. Show the former things. They don't know that either. Consider them and know the latter end of them. Declare unto us things for to come. They don't know past, present, or future. These that are gods that men have made have no power whatsoever. Show the things that are to come hereafter. They can't do it. So he says in verse 24 that they are nothing. Ye are nothing, and your work of naught. Those people that made those gods are nothing. The gods that they made are nothing. And so they are powerless. He says, "I have raised up one from the north, and he shall come from the rising of the sun." That would be from the east. "And he shall come upon my name." Now, if you go east from Baghdad and go north, you come into the ancient land of Media. And so this Cyrus was coming east and north of the capital of Babylon. "And he shall come upon princes as upon mortar." Those of you, brethren, that are builders, when you have mortar, it's soft, easy to manipulate. You can put it on a brick and then put another brick on top of that. And if you do it right, it'll stick. But it is so easy to handle. Also, he says, as the potter treadeth clay. Those of you that have done ceramics know that when the clay is not set, it's fresh, you put water on it, you can just make that clay go every which way. All right? So that's the way it was going to be with these people when Cyrus would come. He would deal with them as we would with mortar or with clay. Who had declared from the beginning that he may know and before time? Verse 27, last part. I will give to Jerusalem one that bringeth good tidings. Well, they'd been in this Babylonian captivity all those years. What good tidings could it be other than they were going to be able to go back home? Verse 29, behold, they are all vanity, their works are nothing, their molten images are wind and confusion. So, that as far as God is concerned, there just is not anyone or anything that can stand against him. When we think about the predictive part that has to do with whether God is God, whether he's deity or not, it's a wonderful thing to me that it was foretold that there were to be four worldwide kingdoms, Daniel 2:44, and that in this case, Cyrus was to come from the east and the north, and he was going to bring good tidings, and that when he came, he was careful for the things of the children of Israel. It is wonderful to me that as history unfolded, that those things that had been predicted of God came to pass. It's the same thing when it comes to Jesus Christ. There are so many things in the book of Isaiah that have to do with our Lord. I do not know how many prophecies there are in the Old Testament concerning the coming of Jesus Christ. We know that as far as ordinary course of events, that for there to be a child, there has to be the seed, and the seed must be from the man. But it was not the case with Jesus. He was the seed of woman. There was no man involved. We find that he was to come from the tribe of Judah. And when we read Hebrews, the 7th chapter, he was from that tribe. He was to be born in Bethlehem. And when we study the New Testament, we see that he was born in Bethlehem. He was to be born of a virgin. And when we study the fulfillment of that prophecy in the New Testament, he was born of a virgin. We see that he had to flee. His parents took him and fled into Egypt when he was less than 2 years of age. It had been prophesied that out of Egypt have I called my son. He was to have a forerunner, according to Malachi 3:1. And there was such a forerunner, as we read in Luke 7, John the Baptist. He was to be declared the Son of God, Psalms 2:7. And when he came, Jesus Christ, when he came up out of the water, was recognized as the Son of God. He was to have a Galilean ministry, and in his early ministry, we see him as he trod the streets and the roads of Galilee. He was to be rejected by his own people, the Jews. And as we study the New Testament fulfillment of the prophecy, we see that was how he came to his death. He was to be a priest forever after the order of Melchizedek. And when he came into his priesthood, Hebrews 7 makes an argument that he could not have been a priest if he had been after the tribe of Levi. But being a priest after the order of Melchizedek, he could be a high priest. His triumphal entry was foretold, and when he came riding on the foal of an ass. He was to be betrayed by a friend, and when he was betrayed, it was one of his own apostles, Judas of Iscariot. He was to be sold for 30 pieces of silver, and when Judas got the price of his betrayal, how much was it? 30 pieces of silver. Though he was to be accused, he was to be silent. in his accusations, according to Isaiah 53. And when he stood before Pilate, Pilate was amazed that he did not answer. He's to be spat and smitten upon. He was to have a vicarious sacrifice for his people. He was to be crucified with malefactors. And when he was crucified, there was a thief on the left and one on the right. He was to be pierced through the hands and feet. And when the fulfillment of the prophecy came, he was nailed to the cross, both his hands and his feet. He was to be given vinegar and gall to drink. And at Golgotha, when he said, "I thirst," what did they give him? Vinegar and gall. He was to be a prayer for his enemies. And he said, "Father, forgive them. They know not what they do." The soldiers were to gamble for his garment. It had been foretold in Psalms, the 22nd chapter. And there at the cross, they were gambling for his robe. When they came to him, the Old Testament had prophesied in Psalms, the 34th chapter, that not a bone should be broken. And when they came to him, they did not break his bones, because they said he was dead already. His side was to be pierced, and a Roman spear went into his side, and forthwith came blood and water. He was to be buried with the rich, and when he was buried, it was in the new tomb of Joseph of Arimathea, a rich man. He was to rise from the dead, according to Psalms, the 16th chapter, and Psalms, the 49th chapter, and when you come to the books that deal with his resurrection, it was exactly as it had been foretold. And his ascension to God, even, was foretold. And when he had been on this earth for 40 days after his resurrection, we see him as he went out on the Mount of Olives. And while they beheld, a cloud received him out of their sight. And there were men that stood by, two men, saying, "Why look you steadfastly into heaven? This same Jesus, whom you have seen go to heaven, will so come in like manner." And brethren, you and I are here today hoping, looking for that time. What I'm saying to you is this, that if something was just done in general, then it would be easy for people to discount the deity that caused all those prophecies in the Old Testament. But when they were fulfilled down to the minutest detail, it was evident that it had to be from God. And so as we study the book of Isaiah, and we study the wonderful things that we have from this 41st chapter, the predictive element of prophecy is evidence of God's deity. I'll tell you, one of the favorites of all of the fulfilled prophecies of mine, I don't know about you, but I like to read the 17th chapter of Matthew, about, I think it's 27. Anyway, Jesus was asked if he paid tribute. And you know the discussion that they had. Well, he said, so they won't be offended, you go down and you cast a hook. And the first fish that comes up, you look in his mouth, and you'll find a piece of a coin. You'll find some money. And you take that money and go pay the tribute for me and thee. And brethren, I tell you, it would have to be deity that would know that that money was going to be in that fish's mouth. And I'll tell you, I wish that deity sometimes would tell me how to pay my taxes. Because I am confident, brethren, that our deity is stronger than all the kingdoms of men. There may be some person here today that believes in Jesus Christ, and you're repentant of past sins. You're ready to confess his name. Well, we're ready to receive your confession and to baptize you into Jesus Christ. For convenience sake, we sing a song. Over there in India, we didn't sing a song. I didn't know what song we could pick out anyway. It was in the Telugu language. And I looked at that book, and I couldn't figure it out. So I said, well, anybody here that wants to be a Christian, raise your hand. And brethren, that first time, eight raised their hand. We didn't have an invitation song. Well, that works so good, I did it again. I did it again.
And so I learned from that that you don't always have to have an invitation. I'm not sure that they had one on that first Lord's Day, that day of Pentecost. I'm not sure they had one, but they got one, and it makes it easy for you during that song to let it be known. If you're ready to obey God and become one of His children, we invite you to come together with us.